Welcome to Horse First. This is a podcast about beginning with the horse, about paying attention before we explain and listening before we decide what something means, which, as it turns out, takes a bit more skill than it sounds. It's not about blame. It's not about being right. It's about widening the view and learning to carry responsibility without hardening. I'm Lockie Phillips. This is a space for curiosity, steady practice, and skill that keeps the horse at the center. Let's begin. I would like to name a pattern that I call the silencing pattern. There is a familiar moment that many horse people have experienced, myself included, but I don't think that I am solitary or alone in this experience. It goes something like this. You notice something. You don't notice it dramatically, and you don't have an emotional spike or a, for want of a better term, trauma response when you notice it. You just notice something clearly. You notice clearly what somebody else is doing with or to a horse. And when you notice this thing that they are doing to a horse, something doesn't sit right in your mind, in your body. It just doesn't sit right with you. Again, you're not dramatic about it, and you're not emotionally out of control, and you're not having a trauma response. You're just noticing clearly something and it doesn't sit right with you. Maybe this thing you're noticing is a training practice. Perhaps it is a piece of equipment. Perhaps it is the way pressure is applied, or a type of aid that doesn't sit right with you. And the horse's expression keeps being explained away by the folks doing this thing that you're noticing. And when you name it, even gently, a response comes back really fast. You're being judgmental. You're attacking people. You don't understand the context. You're just stirring things up. This episode of the podcast is about exactly that moment, about how discernment is often mislabeled as judgment, especially when discernment challenges practices that could potentially cause harm to horses and also to people, and about how silencing discernment doesn't protect horses, it protects systems that don't protect horses. I'll say that again. Silencing discernment doesn't protect horses. It protects people and systems that aren't actively protecting horses. So discernment, however, is not like a moral verdict. It's not about pontification, and it's not about taking a superiority worldview. Let's separate a few things really clearly. Judgment assigns a moral value. And discernment assesses impact, not intention, impact. Judgment says, this person is bad. And discernment says, this practice produces predictable outcomes. Those are not the same thing. Discernment is a skill. It's the ability to notice patterns, cause and effect, consequences, short-term consequences, long-term consequences. Consequences for an individual in a one-dimensional way, but also consequences in the larger sense, how it affects the practitioner, how it affects the community around that horse and person, and the way cause and effect and the impact of a practice has wider-reaching effects in a community. Someone who, for example, let's take a really obvious example, a 2x4 trainer. These people still exist. A 2x4 trainer is someone who can be hired for the express purpose of using a piece of 2x4 wood to beat a horse up until they submit. That's a really obvious example where discernment could be used to say, hey, this doesn't sit right with me. And judgment would say the person of the 2x4 training is bad, but discernment says this practice produces predictable outcomes, and those predictable outcomes have far-reaching consequences, not just to the horse, but to the person practicing that and to anyone witnessing that and anyone around that person. And those outcomes can have a negative effect on an entire community. An entire community is now flavored by that violence. Horses require discernment from us. Even when no abuse is present, or even when practices are in alignment and are sitting well with us, we still need to be discerning about what to do right now. And in fact, this is the biggest question I get from my clients, from the broader community. It all distills down to one basic question: what do I do right now? And I'm confused why so many people, well, I was confused, why so many people seem so confused about what to do next. And I have to wonder, is it because the discernment has been pushed out of their bodies? Horses cannot advocate for themselves. They can't, in language, explain their nervous systems. They can't opt out of systems if the systems are there to overwhelm them. So in my opinion and experience, discernment isn't an option. It's not optional. It's part of our care of the horses in our care. When discernment gets reframed as judgment, something very specific starts to happen. Attention shifts away from the horse and shifts onto social comfort. Someone says, what you're thinking, feeling, and saying makes me uncomfortable. So I'm going to label you as something negative because I feel uncomfortable about the way you're reflecting back to me. They have another option. If someone is at peace with their practice and they receive pushback or criticism, one could say, I'm at peace with my practice, and I see that you have a different point of view. Cool. I can let you have a different point of view, and I can hear you. Also, your different point of view is not a thing you can use to try and damage me or change me. We are just different. So let's look at a practical example. When quote-unquote results or outcomes silence feedback about how those results were obtained. And let's try to make this a little bit more concrete and a little bit less loose. Let's say we're watching a horse being trained to load onto a trailer, and the horse hesitates, they lift their head, feet get sticky, breathing stops, and the trainer escalates the pressure really quickly and the horse loads. From the outside, this looks effective. But discernment notices the sequence of impact, cause, and effect. The horse perhaps didn't understand the trainer and then comply. They just avoided the escalation that occurred when they hesitated. And if you name that, you may hear, well, they loaded, didn't they? You're thinking too much. You're reading too much into it. Not every hesitation is trauma. And we should listen to that because that's also a valid reply. However, discernment isn't claiming trauma, not in all circumstances. Discernment is naming learning conditions clearly. The horse learned that hesitation increases pressure, and the pressure simply increases without necessarily refinement of the way the pressure is landing in their body. It wasn't like a changing of the rhythm of the pressure or a changing of a location of the pressure on the body or the signal altering to become more optimized on a body part that could help them get their feet unstuck. It was just more pressure. It's the horsemanship equivalent of, if someone doesn't understand you, just speak louder. Don't try to isolate the symbols and help them understand the symbols one at a time. You just speak louder. And it's okay for us to label discerningly, hey, you just spoke louder. That's what caused them to load. Calling that out or naming that calmly isn't in judgment of the trainer. It's just literacy about learning. It's literacy about nervous system. It's literacy about cause and effect. And it's literacy about the potential impact that choice in training will have. And naming that does not mean we are asking anyone else to change. We are simply naming it, just pointing at it. We're not asking you to change it, and we're not calling anyone bad. We're just naming it, and we're allowed to name it. Because as far as I know, free speech is the cornerstone of freedom. However, I would like to invite you to come and learn with me inside the EH School. This is a low-cost, high-value, flexible membership for people who want more than just quick fixes and louder answers. Inside, you will find a growing video library, a thoughtful off-social media discussion space, and live coaching calls with myself and often with my team, all designed to help you get to the heart of what's really happening in your horsemanship. This is not about following a method. It's about building clarity, skill, and confidence with the horses always placed as the first priority. If you're looking for a steady place to learn, reflect, and progress your practical skills without force of horses or overwhelm of yourself, I hope you will come and feel at home with us in the EH School. You can find the sign up by the link in the show notes, or you can visit emotionalhorsemanship.com and navigate to the EH School sign up. Of horsemanship invested in speed often label that literacy of naming impact as negativity towards them at a personal level. They take it personally. So why does discernment feel threatening to some people? Discernment often, but not always, slows things down. Sometimes my discernment asks people to speed up, but that's my client community who are often on the other side of this issue, where they've slowed things down already until the point things did become too slow and the horse learned inertia. And in that situation, discernment says, let's speed up. But generally speaking, when we're approaching, I think, horsemanship on a broader perspective, most of the time these days, discernment slows things down. It interrupts narratives like, well, it works, the horse is fine, and that's just how it's done. It interrupts those narratives. And when people's identity, income, relationships, or reputation is tied to a method or an approach or a philosophy, discernment feels like an attack. Especially if they're not used to difference and counterpoint and discussion around that. So it gets reframed. Concern becomes criticism in the negative or the pejorative. Observations become an accusation. Questions become hostility. However, I don't think this discussion that I'm having lets discerning people off the hook entirely. If we choose to engage in discernment, such as naming concerns, literacy about learning, speaking our observations, and asking questions, we are not off the hook in our requirement to frame that in a respectful manner for all parties. And I include myself in that. And sometimes I get that wrong. And sometimes I've gotten that wrong. And sometimes I get that right. However, I am aware, and I am noticing how important it is that discernment never becomes a critical attack, never becomes accusatory, and never becomes hostile. And I think that's a skill that modern forms of communication are encouraging us to lose. And it requires a lot of effort to stay discerning without becoming critical or accusatory. However, this is how dissent does get quieted, not by arguing facts, but by questioning the tone of the person noticing them. And this is not the first time I've had this conversation where I talked about the way I've been tone policed. People bypass the argument. They bypass what I'm noticing. They bypass the actual content of my speech. And instead, they will attack my tone and say, my tone is attacking. And I say, well, that's an interesting way. You attack tone and say, they attack me and say, your tone is attacking me. It's like, well, this is ironic, isn't it? What are we doing? What are we even doing here? And I'm having sense of humor now, not to smirk at people. I'm just noticing that that's ironic. Meanwhile, the horse stays in the same system. And can we see how this is a distraction technique? Let's use another practical example. So equipment and invisible pressure. Another example, a horse is ridden in equipment that increases leverage. There could be any piece of leverage equipment, from leverage bits to sticks to even spurs to anything that increases leverage. And the horse is responsive. They are quiet and they are accurate. But over time, you notice tight backs, braced jaws, reduced variation, delayed reactions when equipment changes. And reduced variation is one of my canaries in the coal mine. We used to think that reduced variation was a sign of success. Recent neurological studies in emotion now frame variation as a sign of mental health. When you're able to vary your responses as a sign of mental health. So discernment connects those dots and it notices the tight backs, braced jaws, reduced variation, delayed reactions when equipment changes, and that the horse is responsive, quiet, and accurate. You connect those dots and you go, sometimes 1 + 1 = 2. And then discernment doesn't say everyone who does this is abusive. It says this tool reduces the horse's ability to communicate discomfort early. And the horse's ability to communicate discomfort early is necessary for soundness outcomes. That's not judgment. That's a functional assessment of the impact of learning. It's literacy and understanding the way learning tracks over time. But again, when you name this, this triggers a response from people saying, you're shaming people. You're anti-progress. You're incapable of producing outcomes. You're just emotional. Notice this move, guys. The conversation immediately shifts away from the horse's experience being placed in first position. The horse is no longer in first position. And the conversation instead shifts onto the discomfort of those being questioned. Another practical example, when quiet horses are not always okay, a horse becomes quote unquote easy. No refusals, no spook, no resistance. But also, there's a diminishing curiosity, a reduction in elasticity, relational elasticity, even physical biomechanical elasticity, and also a strange absence of the horse expressing opinion. And discernment notices that, joins the dots. A horse who's not refusing, not spooking, and not resisting, but also not curious, not elastic, not plastic, not expressing opinion. And discernment asks, for example, what changed in the learning environment that made expression unnecessary? And when you ask that, you may be told, would you rather the horse be dangerous? You can't have it both ways. Some horses are just quiet. That's just who they are. Discernment isn't about romanticizing chaos or being an anarchist or trying to advocate for dysregulation. It's about protecting communication as a two-way street and a communication between horse and person as a safety system. And when the communication is no longer two-way, that safety system between a horse and a person is now in breakdown. So the person feels safe, but is actually experiencing a breakdown in the safety system between them and their horse. When horses lose the ability to answer back, problems don't just disappear, they just get delayed. So, how do we protect discernment without becoming hardened towards others? And this is the hard part. People who practice discernment often get exhausted, especially in the horse world. We get tired of explaining, tired of being misunderstood, and tired of being labeled difficult or having a problem with our tone, being problematic, or being judgmental. But that's what our detractors want. They want to exhaust us, to quiet us. And indeed, some people do go quiet. And some people, and I think I'm in the latter category, some people get sharper. They deal with that exhaustion by overcompensating towards sharpness. Neither of these options help horses. Neither of these options put the horses first. What helps is staying steady. Doesn't mean you have to have the same volume every day. Some days you just have a word. No. That's all you got. And other days you have a whole book to say. Naming what you see does not require that you collapse into an apology for noticing what you see. And it doesn't require you escalating into any kind of attack. Hold the line that caring for horses includes the ability to assess and regulate what we do. Care includes assessment. And compassion in training includes clarity. And dissent can be grounded, skilled, and necessary. So here's a gentle question I'd like my listeners to take with you from this episode. When someone calls your discernment judgment, ask yourself, whose comfort is being protected right now? The horse, the person, or the community surrounding that person? And whose experience is being ignored? Because I think horses need people who can tell the difference between these two things. If you think you're a discerning person and if you think you've been quieted somehow, I'd like to gently encourage you to start to find your voice. In 2026, more than any other year, I think we need to encourage people to open their mouth. And you're allowed to set boundaries between yourself and people who try to discourage you or frighten you into keeping your mouth shut. I hope this helps anyone who listens to it. Thank you for being here. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye for now.